people here we want to talk to, and you certainly were on the list, and so here you are.
Where do we begin? That's the thing, because I went to Yale, but I didn't play golf.
Right.
Well, when did your class of what?
Class of 38, 1938.
And when was your first encounter with the course, and how did you...
My first encounter with the course was probably in around 1952. You ought to put in the great Murray Murdoch, who was coach of hockey. Of course, Iron Man of hockey player. He brought me up here. He and I were great friends. He brought me up here every now and then on a weekend, Saturday or Sunday, to play as his guest.
Hmm.
And I did that for maybe 2 years. And then I became a member, I say, around 54, 55.
Well, but you had been playing golf at that time?
I played golf. I started... caddy in 1929.
Uh-huh.
I caddy from 1929 to 1933. I was
where?
In Walpole, Mass. Which is very close to Norton, which they had the big tournament there.
Right.
Small town in those days, about 5,000, 6,000. And I played, I caddied for 4 years, because that's how I learned to play, because we played every Monday morning, and waiting in line for a job, we were always sitting in the club.
Yeah.
And in fact, we had a little miniature golf course if you played.
Huh.
Anyway, but then I say,
so you joined as a player here in the early 50s.
Yeah, I never saw this golf course when I was at Yale. I was a self-supporting student. And yeah.
Too busy working.
I played hockey. That's the only sport.
Did the graduates then have much to do with the course, did you think?
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
friends,
yeah,
some people talk about it. And
The university had a golf team.
Right.
I think the university more win the NCAA
21,
golf
21 more than anyone.
More than any sport on the sport too.
Yeah.
Or more than any sport as well.
Well, I think that's so.
Probably
yeah,
true.
Probably. Yeah. Huh.
But you know, there was a great guy, and I can't think of his name, from Cleveland, who was in the class of 38, who played. Went to the finals in the amateur championship. I know he's from Cleveland.
Gardner?
No, I think we can have it after much.
So you came back in the 50s then as a...
Yeah, I played...
Weekend player and then a member.
I was married in 39 and 41 I started to play a little bit. Not here, but at the Horses Round. You know, in those days, Woodbridge was a 13-hole course, public course.
13?
Really?
Right. A public course?
Right, Bill? Bob?
Yeah.
And we played there, and then a walk came, and then I stopped and didn't play again until about 47, 48. Played a few times then, and then when...
Before the war, it was all Christian. Out.
So when you started playing... So when you started playing here as a member, was Sullivan here then, or who was here then? Wilson, or who?
Dick Sullivan, wasn't he?
Huh?
Yeah.
In 54, 55?
Yeah. Then came Al.
Yeah, he was here. He was only here a year or two while I was here.
Who?
Sullivan. But I have the feeling he wasn't here at all. When I was a member. He was here when Murray took me up here. I don't think he was there. I wasn't a member, I don't think. I think it was Al Wilson.
What year he left, but I swear.
How was the course different then than it is now? Or was it?
Well, it's getting restored now.
Because not a lot of... rough was rougher, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. The 18th hole, if you teed off on the 18th hole, it was rough all the way out to the flats over the first mound.
Huh.
You knocked it down, forget it. You couldn't, not only couldn't hit it, you couldn't find it.
Had more bunkers. Like, now they had... The bunker on the second, which they took out, right? It must have been a bunker, but left-hand
fairway
side.
Bunker? Under the trees?
Yes,
or
just over the creek.
Oh, yeah, it really wasn't in play, really.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, the bunker was in play was at the top of the 18th second hill.
Yeah.
And then the third hole, they tell me one time, there was a bunker on it to the right of the creek. No?
I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know. I recall.
I think the most dramatic change in the whole golf course was the 17th hole used to be just like this. You're hitting against a perpendicular.
Huh. across the pond. They went that sheer cliff.
Get it up 100 yards in the air to get it over
if
that.
If you didn't hit over the top, if you hit against it,
it just
came
drove
back
right
in
into
the,
it.
It came back in the pond.
So when was that? It was spilled in then?
No, it was knocked down.
They graded it.
It was higher than it was now?
Higher, and it was straight up and down.
It was straight up and down. What they leveled
it
all.
I know it was higher, but
they made it like this.
Like this, yeah. like this.
Yeah. So they had to bring in.
I don't know. I don't remember how they did it.
That would have been what, in the 50s?
Well, I'm wondering, is that, as part of that, they must have done that and took out the huge bunker in front of 12 at the same time, did they?
Might have.
Because it's right connected right across.
Yeah, I think so, John. You know?
I mean, I always had the idea that they took the, they pushed the hill into the bunker in front of 12 to level it out, and they pushed some of that dirt over to the 17th and...
Oh, they might,
graded it.
I think, I don't want to blow up the reason, but I think our contribution could be the Eli Club.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, as I recall, Yale, that is the clubhouse of the pro, didn't run tournaments, right? So, a fellow named Abe Weisman, you said?
Abe Weisman.
A very, very popular and very successful lawyer.
I knew Abe,
yeah. He started what is called Eli Club. And members, and they, I don't know what the dues were, maybe $10 or $15 originally, get together, and they ran tournaments. Member tournaments, member guest tournaments. And they also had championships at the end of the season, right?
Right. It was like a club within the Yale.
Yeah.
It's kind of
right.
Defined, if you will. You had to join and pay dues. And
first you had to join the Yale golf course, then you joined the Eli Club for a very nominal
$10-$15 maybe.
But they took on the responsibilities of organizing the tournament.
Like for $2 or something, they'd have a tournament on Saturday morning. You come have breakfast.
So how many
start arguing
people
with
would that have had?
Well, eventually, over 125.
Yeah. But originally, it was something.
Who followed Abe Weisman? Abe was only, your brother-in-law? And your father-in-law?
Arthur? No, he was never president.
Never?
No. Wasn't Sam Koop? I don't know. But the way they elected office...
What about John Schleicher?
You never heard such an election in your life. Somebody stand up and say, I nominate the same slate of officers we had last year. I say, that's it. And Tetrick would stand up, how come we don't have a Jewish president? Shut up!
We had a lot of fun. It was a great organization. It was a lot of fun. And I'm not so sure John Schleicher wasn't president for a while. Anyway, let's go back to the important thing. Bob's brother, Dick Tuttleback, was president, for about 25 years? I was the treasurer at the same time.
Two crooks
for the same and in perpetuity.
Right.
Yeah. And we had at times we had quite a bit of money in the city.
And Arthur kept the golf scores, and I toted the beer up for consumption.
Because you have plaques in there of the Eli Golf Club.
Right. So this was from the 50s. From the
60s. Well, it started before I came to can't remember.
Yeah, it started in the 40s, didn't it, actually?
I think you did, right.
Yeah, with Abe Weisman.
Yeah, so, it went over 50 years.
Oh, yeah.
It was in existence over 50 years, for sure.
I'll tell you one of the great stories of the year. I don't know if we're getting too funny here. You tell me, but the funny story was they're looking for new members for the Eli Club. So my illustrious brother goes out and interviews the guy and gets him. Who do you think he brings up here as a member? The liquor commissioner. Everybody had a bottle stashed in their life. He was the liquor commissioner. Well, that ended that all of a sudden.
Oh, really? No. You voted him in. I don't know.
Well, tell us about your brother. since we can't interview him, tell us about Dick Teitelbaum. He's a
trip all of his own. He marched to his own drummer.
Well, when we had meetings here, he had more jokes, and he was just...
I never knew anybody. My brother, this isn't bragging or something. This is factual. I never heard anybody that could stand on his feet for so long and disarray you with a number of jokes, and you never heard one.
Never
before.
Repeat him, huh?
Unbelievable.
He's a good golf player, too?
Yeah, yeah.
He's very good. Uh-huh.
And there's some great stories about him. Mm. I was always known for my nerves, and we were working together, putting the beer out on the 10th tee for Woody Neal tournament. So before the tournament starts, I brought up the big chunk of ice, and we toted the beer up, the cans up there. And Dick says, "Better let me chop the ice. You're not too steady." And I said, "I'm chopping." Kept opening the beer cans and we kept drinking. We each put about 7 of them for the tournament and we won the tournament.
Dick eventually became president of the Connecticut Golf Association.
Yeah, he was president of the Connecticut State Golf Association for some time.
You probably have information on Woody Neal.
Well, no, we want all we can get. So that would be my next. If you don't have anything more to tell us about Dick, tell us about Woody Neal.
Well, Woody, I'll tell you one thing concerning Woody and Dick. Woody was very, very tough. I did not go to Yale, and I was one of the first few to ever get in here that didn't go to Yale.
Huh.
And Dick took me over and introduced me to Woody. And he says, "What do you like about him? Why do you want to get into the golf course?" And I said, "I'd like to sell him the locker room." "Well, if we got one, we'll have to settle back," he said. "We'll have a good one."
Well, Woody was sort of like a dictator, right?
Yes.
If Woody wanted you in the golf course, he'd get you in.
Sort of like, what's his name? Augusta.
Beneficent. Right. He ran a good ship.
Yeah. I'm not Roberts. Being critical.
Mr. Roberts. Oh, yeah, the Mr. Roberts.
He ran a good ship.
Benevolent dictator.
He controlled the place. He controlled the place and controlled it properly. He was a stickler for the rules of golf.
So we grew up, Dick and I grew up in Westville. With all of Yale properties at our disposal. Right. We used to sneak into the golf course back in when we first built
and the over
and get our clubs taken away. And Woody's big holler was, if somebody came up in the clubhouse by the name of Dick Teitelbaum and complained that Woody Neal was holding him up on the golf course.
But now, are you serious that you played here, snuck on the golf course? Wait a minute. Before Dick was a student at Yale?
Oh, yeah, long before, John.
So how old did Dick are you?
4 years.
Only four.
So what might have been the first year that you came here?
Dick was born in 29, and I would say, 37, 38, we were up here playing golf.
And so you were here before there was any water on the course?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. And Bill Perkins was the astute chief of, what do I want to say?
Superintendent.
No.
What is his job? Not businessman. He had a big job down in the athletic department.
Yeah, but he also was
the director of golf.
The guard of all the property.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he was in charge of properties. Of Yale.
So he would kick you off?
Yeah. And wait till I tell you. And he'd come and he'd tell Dan Teitelbaum kids, he'd say, "We knew him real well."
How old were you then?
We were little kids.
12 years old?
I was about 12.
So what were you doing for clubs?
We'd take Dad's sawed some of his off for us, and we'd play.
Huh.
And he'd take them away from us. And he and my mother, don't you think, went to grammar school together, old Bill and old Virginia. So she'd call him, "Bill Perkins, you get my son back at golf club." "Okay, Jimmy," he said. So we'd go get our clubs and start out the next day, and the same thing, get them taken away again.
Huh. And now, did you ever caddy here?
Oh, God, yeah. Huh. And we used to climb over Central Avenue and used all the football fields, the baseball fields. We had a hell of a growing up, I'll tell you. We used all, thank God Dick finally went to Yale. Getting something back for what we took.
But you did caddy here and got paid for it?
Oh, yeah.
They had caddies, the only thing they had. So, you know,
Where was there a caddy shack?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right down by the. Let me think of it.
Down, by the down over here.
Yeah.
By the cart park. Well, when I started playing here, and I'd come up on a Saturday morning, the caddies would all be sitting under the shelter over there by the first tee.
Yeah.
That wasn't the caddy shack.
No.
There was a shack over here by the cart barn.
Because they played basketball over here. They had a hoop set up.
What'd you get paid to caddy?
50 cents.
Oh, more than that.
No.
What did you do?
When I first started, I got 50 cents.
Oh, come on.
And if you weren't standing by the ball, you didn't get anything.
I started caddy in 1939. That was 1929.
What'd you get?
If you were a C caddy, you got 65 cents a bag. Became a...
That was a double F.
C caddy, well, it was 65. 65. Then when you became a 65... When you started out as a C caddy, when you probably came an A caddy, you got 75.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Don't
yeah.
Wine,
well,
so.
Okay.
Get
all right.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Hello.
So you want to get more than 50 cents here.
So
no, that's what it is to get, 50 cents.
What's the difference between an A caddy and a C caddy? What was how did
one found your ball for you, the other one.
Well, of course, I caddied on that in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
A B caddy was a caddy who was just starting out, as soon as you started. And you, what they did in those days, you wanted to be a caddy,
right.
So the pro was going to play around the golf. So the pro took you out, and you carried a bag free for the pro as he instructed you how to caddy. Now, I didn't start that way because, of course, this gets away from the old golf course. You don't want to get away from
the golf. Go ahead. It's a part of it.
I said I was up in Massachusetts, and I had two or three buddies that were caddying, and I wasn't caddying. I didn't know golf and Shinola in those days. But one Sunday, I decided I'm going up to the golf course to see what it's all about and see my buddies. I got up there, and it was a busy Sunday, and I was standing around clubhouse first tee, go up by the first hole where they drove. Bo came along. He said, "What are you doing up here?" Friend of Dave Walsh and Eddie Murray or caddy, they just wanted to find out what it was all about. We need a caddy. Come with me, and he gave me a bag to carry. That's the first time.
Learned quick, right.
So when you were sneaking up here in the afternoon and caddying in the 30s, there was a pro, or what was this? I mean, who was?
You know, I don't honestly remember who the heck was pro up there.
I know he was a Scotch guy, but not McDonald. He was a Scotchman.
The pro
basically in those days was also coach of the golf team, wasn't he?
You're talking before Sullivan. You're talking
before Sullivan, yeah.
But we didn't have too much to do with him.
Right.
We'd get thrown
out. You didn't want to see him. True, Bob, that the pro here was also coach of the golf team.
Yeah.
Well, that was true up through Dave Patterson.
Sure.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
What else do you remember about, say, the earlier 50s and the 60s in terms of the Eli Club? And did it get a lot of play? I mean, is your sense that there's been a lot more play?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot more play today than those days.
Was it well known outside of
the circle? I don't think we had starting times, did we?
No.
Just came up here and
took
off.
Yeah.
Except when we had tournaments. I remember.
When I first joined here, you had to go out and look for somebody to play with.
Yeah.
You go out and look through the woods and find my brother one. Get over here.
As you said, the course had a lot more rough. Grass was higher. Like a lot of the holes in front of there's a path from the tee to the green.
Right.
There was a path on both sides of the path. The grass is high,
yeah,
out for at least 100 yards or more, right?
Oh, at least.
Yeah.
Huh.
A lot like the 18, like the 60s is now, for the back tee.
Right.
That's how, had hit a fairly good drive. He knocked it down.
Right.
Forget it.
Right.
Of course, we had no water, and sometimes the course got very, the fairways got very high, and the ball would roll forever.
Yeah.
I remember Well, the watering system, the 16th hole, knocking my second shot over the 16th green. Because the drive rolls so far, and I forget what I was using my second shot was at.
That's three wood coming back.
I think one time I hit it over a drive and an iron, because it was about 500 yards.
Yeah.
The ball would roll forever. It was awfully, got awfully dry and hard.
You're looking for the history of this thing.
Yeah.
You know, just what you're searching or what we could tell you that would be of help.
Well, I mean, we, as I said, we don't yet know exactly ourselves because the charge is very broad. That is to try to pull together a lot of different materials about golf at Yale, just because it's got a long, illustrious history, and because the course has such a special place, and because the course is, you know, some things have changed, some things haven't changed, and different people, like your experience with the Eli Club and all, I mean, that's very different from the students or the
that
average
was an experience,
members.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
I would say, from the time the Eli Club was formed until about 10 years ago when it was disbanded, it really was the most important group up here.
Aside from the teams, aside from the golf team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was the, in terms of a group,
team. I mean, we had, quite a few member tournaments. We had, I think, two member guest tournaments, right, which were very well attended.
Yeah.
I mean, we had people from New Haven, from Racebrook, all around came, were invited.
Yeah.
And,
now, why did
it disband? Then we had the club championships.
Yeah. The club was the one that ran the club championships.
What?
The club was the one that ran.
No, we did. Eli.
No, I mean, the Eli Club ran the club, and by club is the Yale Club, not just the Eli Club.
The change came when they moved from having one person, that is Dave Patterson, be the coach and the pro, to having more administration, so that now Peter and his staff were able to take over the.
I think it was a little different.
That's the nice way to put it. Okay, that's the nice way to put it.
What
was an evolution of administration.
I didn't go to Yale. I'll say it as it lies. All right, some son of a bitch got in charge and threw the whole thing out of the water.
Bob, wasn't it because it became a gender thing?
What's that?
Women. No women in.
Yeah.
Right.
Somebody made a big belly aching scene.
Yeah.
But there are no women on the staff either. So I mean,
the tournaments now include women.
Yeah, but they could have started a women's tournament without.
Tell you what happened.
We disbanding the Eli Club.
We don't know why.
Anyway.
That blew up real quick.
That's something in the background.
is there anyone else around besides you, old Coots?
I resemble that remark, Doctor.
Anyone else around that can go back and tell us? We're hopefully gonna interview Harry Musil.
John Schleicher should be.
John Schleicher, right?
But he was here before me, and I think he's.
Was he here before you?
Oh yeah.
And he's been champion many times.
Was he the original champion?
Well, I'm not sure that goes back to the original, but he's up top, yeah.
Well, that's the original.
Yeah.
40, what, sometime in place in the 40s?
Let's go back.
No, I want to go anyway.
I'll tell you another guy who's still around, who, Paul Rodden.
Paul Rodden.
Paul Rodden, I don't know him.
He lives down on Aldine. He doesn't play golf anymore.
Yeah.
Boy, he was full of history.
And he was active in the Eli Club,
too.
Are
he was all over the country collecting pencils from every golf course he ever played. It is really, you ought to see this collection he's got.
That's amazing. Now, does Eli Club have, are there like their photos or anything of years of members?
I don't know.
It'd be neat to pull together a few photographs of the membership.
There must be somewhere.
I mean, it doesn't sound like records of meetings were kept particularly accurately. Those aren't the meetings you'd want a record of anyway, I suppose.
You know, it's so much fun.
So the people get together during the winter, too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was sort of a social club.
We had snowball tournaments.
But so You mean you get together here at the old clubhouse?
Yeah.
Or was there any place in town?
No, they'd have dinners, or we'd get down to Maury's. We always had our dinners down there at Maury's.
The annual membership meeting. Yeah.
Nick presided. Oh, God. Well, we're sitting, I got to tell you a great story. We had this guy who everybody, he just was the biggest fucking cheater you ever met in your whole life. I won't mention names. Right. On the eighth hole, you know, he hit a booming drive out there. He's playing with Dick. Takes out an 8-iron and hits it like this into the woods down my house. He takes a club and throws it. Takes it. Done this roll, provisional club, Tom. I think it was.
No, I don't.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't, but, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have as much information.
Well, 1955, I think, was the start of the club champions.
Huh. Yeah, John Slager would be
a because he always tells me, he always kids me about my neighbor Devon the boy. He said, in one of those tournaments, he said, I beat you 4-3. I said, no, it's 2-1. Because I said, after all, you were playing an old man who was about 15 years older than you.
Next year's the 50th anniversary.
Well, if that's truly the first club championship they had.
Huh. And John could tell us.
Oh,
that.
Yeah, John will know that. I got to add him to my list. John is on my list. I got to add
Maybe him. I'll call John today.
Well, tell him what we're up to, sure.
Yeah. And put Paul Rodden on there.
Yeah.
John.
Down Coop. You have him.
Yep.
So beyond the Eli Club playing then there were regular members who were part of the club.
That's right.
But, I mean, basically the Eli Club was the core of
we didn't speak to them.
No, there were people that played here regularly that weren't members of the Eli Club.
Oh, yeah.
But I would say that, I don't know.
The spirit of the club.
Because as far as regular members, people who played here regularly, I think most of them joined the Eli Club. There were, you know,
it made no sense not to.
If you wanted to participate, I mean, if you just want to play golf, okay, but if you want to participate in tournaments, you join. Yeah. And I think we had, I'm sure, because I was treasurer, I think we had 125 times at the end.
And, where did the money go?
Because I went to, back in the 80s, I used to go to Florida. April, when we have our first meeting, everybody said, well, how was your winter in Florida on the Eli Club?
The conference would start out empty in April.
I was treasurer. Nobody ever checked anything. I could have walked off with money, but I mean, at a time there were...
You mean you didn't?
At a time there could be close to $10,000 in the treasury.
Oh. Are there any materials about the Eli Club? Not so much financial records, but like photographs or this things that might be worth.
I think I did have before I moved. I maybe have some newspaper clippings. Yeah. I know John Slyker has.
Yeah, all right, we'll call John. You call John, tell him I'll be calling.
Okay. You have a pencil.
So what are your thoughts about the course more recently? I mean, sort of the Eli Club era seemed to have a lot of camaraderie and good times. I think it's become too big in scale and too many people personal, or sort of lost some of that? Or I mean, part of it's inevitable, I guess. You got to have a larger membership base and event schedule to sustain it. But
My age, I haven't participated in. Well, I did the first few years when the Eli Club was disbanded, and then actually the clubhouse, the pro shop took over, right? Mm. Running the tournaments. Well, they had a golf association. Yeah, that's another thing. They had a Yale Golf Association.
Right. Still do.
But it was very, very didn't do anything.
Now they're trying to do more.
Yeah. And that was run out of the athletic department? Or how would they?
No, that was alumni.
Alumni.
I'm trying to figure the guy from Brooklaw who was president for many years.
Yeah, I can't hear his name.
Yeah.
We'd have one meeting in May, a breakfast meeting. He'd come up and to the slate of offices.
What the hell is his name? Yeah, there was and is a Yale Golf Association.
Right. But the Eli Club coexisted with the Golf Association for a long time.
Yes.
The Golf Association did very little, if anything.
Right.
In those days. Huh. It's more active now.
We had an active bunch up there. Meetings, the dinners.
We had
tournaments.
We had an opening, meeting, right? Dinner, right? Uh-huh. Just dinner. Uh-huh. And then at the close, we had dinner where we gave out the awards. Yeah. And
got of worries.
You know, we first used to get plaques or some kind of a piece of silver. Mm-hmm. But as we got to the end, got jackets. I have two blocker jackets, one winter and one summer.
Huh.
Plus, I got two beautiful jackets, still out. And I used to give cashmere sweaters because Mo Decker, who ran a clothing company, and he used to give us good prices on the cashmere jackets
were very nice.
Cashmere sweaters.
Huh.
And of course, Mo was a big member. He was one of the goes back when the original member. Yeah. Unfortunately, he's not around.
Hmm. And the Eli Club was open. You didn't have to be a Yale alumnus.
No.
I mean, you just had to.
You had to be a member of the Yale Club,
of course. And
I would say, would you say there were more non-graduates than graduates?
I
think so, yeah. I would say that. Yale in those days depended a lot on, well, what happened first was marketing come around. Back in the 20s, 30s, and that era, 40s, during the summer when school was closed, local citizens, right, could come up here and play for the 3 months that school was closed at a very reasonable price, right? And then, as I understand it, this went on for years and years and years. And then they decided they were going to that out. But they felt they had to give these people...
Grandfather them in.
A chance to become full members if they wanted to. And that's how a lot of people create full members, right?
And when...
I think that was in the late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah.
Because when I started playing here in 58, there were a lot of people playing here, and I'd say, well, when did you go to Yale? And they'd say, I didn't, but I got grandfathered in. So it must have happened in the mid-50s or early 50s.
There were a lot of the Yale Club were in that city.
But even then, you could join as a full member if you weren't Yale, right? Or no? Oh, you had to be.
In the late 50s up until... like 10 years ago.
Oh. Yeah,
for 35-40 years, it was strictly Yale, except for these grandfathered people.
Uh-huh.
Then in the last 10 years or so, they've sold a limited number of corporate or other memberships with an initiation fee and what have you.
Can anybody become a member today if you pay the fee? What is it?
Yeah. Right. Well, there's a limited number of slots, but I don't think they ever filled all the slots. So anyone that wants to pay can join now, pretty much. But that's a very recent development.
They were very strict after they grandfathered these fellows and put people in. And I think Yale was a publicity thing. They figured they had all these fellows, local people who've been playing here.
Right.
But 10, 15 years, summers, right?
Right.
They all of a sudden say, you can't, you know, would have been going to...
Right.
But wouldn't have been a very PR good
disaster.
They were very good taste.
Some of us played here when we were little kids too.
Yeah.
Right.
We had to be grandfathered.
So that's interesting because the Eli Club is also important because it kind of kept
it
alive.
Yeah,
it involved local people.
It kept the generation there.
Otherwise, it would have been just a golf course. People come in and play.
Right. I mean, either as visitors or the students coming in and then they leave. Or,
going back in history, this is before the, just something that came to me. It was well publicized. To be a very famous foursome that played here. Was Gene Tunney.
Gene Tunney?
Yeah. Grantland Rice.
Grantland Rice?
Yeah.
Who was the great English, professor, well-known, God, I should know. He was
English professor at Yale?
Yeah, back in the 20s and 30s. Oh, God, what's his name? I forget who the, but you ought to check somebody that.
Course, who was the fourth?
I can't remember who the fourth. I know Gene Tunney was in. I know it was,
but they played more than once?
Oh, yes. Huh. They played here quite often.
So Gene Tunney and Rice would come up from the city.
Gene Tunney, Grattan and Rice, this
English professor. He was the host, I guess.
Yeah, and they would play. And what they would do, as I recall, and this is the story, that when they had a very difficult shot, they were supposed to make a quotation from Shakespeare to illustrate their position. And Gene Tunney was, as a matter of fact, very, I understand, quite a scholar on Shakespeare.
Really?
So, I don't know where you can go to...
Well, so somewhere in Grantland Rice's papers, there ought to be his story of this.
Yeah, I can dig that. So this would have been...
In the 20s, sir.
Yeah, not long after the course opened.
Right.
You know who should get a big vote of something in your church in London? Mr. Beinecke.
He did for this golf course. Yeah. Well, we're going to interview John.
I got to think of that. Boy, very well. He was a popularizer of English. He's on the radio and everything.
Oh, you don't mean, oh shit.
Yeah, that's him.
Oh, God, what's his name? World famous. He was on the radio and...
Churchill.
No.
Good try, Bob. Good try.
Franklin.
I can't think of it.
Well, is the stories about Ed Sullivan playing here true? You ever heard that?
Ed Sullivan? No, I don't know about that. You mean the guy on TV? No, I don't know anything about that.
Okay.
He might have played here. Huh. I know a lot of people. There was a guy who used to play here. I know when Murray used to know, I don't know if he knew him, but he recognized him from, no, it wasn't Murray that knew him. He was from Hollywood. He used to come up here on TV. He used to come up here and play. This is back then, 20 years ago. I can't.
Well, a lot of people.
And I played here with Hal Linden. I played with Hal Linden.
That's the guy.
My son Mark and I played with Hal Linden.
But he was movies at TV.
He's still on TV. I played with him.
You can find out information on that for
sure. I will. No,
we'll dig it out. Grantland Rice played here more than once. It's got to be in his paper somewhere.
Yeah. The whole thing about the Eli Club is pretty important.
You didn't know about that?
Well, I knew I heard about it, but I didn't really know, what it was and how it fit.
When you look at it, it really wove this whole thing together.
Yeah.
It was, for during that period, it was the most important part of the conference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really was.
It was a lot of fun.
Did you have any input into sort of golf course policy, or did they?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Ruled the roost.
I know.
Woody Neal was that.
Yeah.
Woody Neal took care of the golf course. You didn't.
Woody was
manager, what do they call him, of the Connecticut State Golf Association?
Executive secretary
for about 40-45 years. He had. What's the guy from the original one? Facebook. Party, he was it?
Party.
And he were, to combine, they were executive secretary for about 90 straight years. Both had about 40 odd years.
Right.
Huh. The relations with the Eli Club were fine between Woody Neal.
I'll tell you another great foursome.
He never messed with them. He knew who was in charge.
I'll tell you another great foursome used to play up here. This is an athletic foursome. I was a very close friend of Murray Murdoch. Murray?
Yeah, I don't know much about him, but I know he
was
who he is. Yeah.
Original New York Ranger. Right. He was the first Ranger signed when they started the team in 1926. And he became the original Iron Man of hockey. From the day he started, they quit. He never missed a game. Then he became coach at Yale.
Right.
But anyway, there was a foursome here of Murray Murdoch, who was the Iron Man of hockey.
Ethan Allen.
No. Then there was Red Rolfe.
Oh, geez.
Red Rolfe.
Yeah. Red Rolfe was a Dartmouth graduate.
R-O-L-F.
R-O-L-F-E.
E.
O-F-E,
excuse me. He was the
a graduate of Boston. Played third base for the New York Yankees in the day in the late 30s, early 40s.
Coached it, yeah.
He then became, after he quit, playing baseball, became a manager, I believe, of the New York Yankees. Then came to Yale and coached both baseball and basketball.
Oh, okay.
Then he went to Detroit as manager. He got colitis, and he quit that. He went back to Dartmouth as athletic director.
Hmm.
Then the other members, you had Billy Neal, who was a member, running back for the great class of, I think, 1924, a football team, which was number one in the country that year.
Mm-hmm.
And he started the intramural program at Yale. Came, of course, had it ran the golf course, and he executive director.
Was Greasy in that group, too, his brother?
That's the next one.
Oh, did Greasy play with?
And then Greasy Neal, his brother, who was a graduate of West Virginia. Both of them went to West Virginia, but Whitty, his sophomore year, transferred to Yale. Now, Greasy played both professional football and professional baseball for a while.
Hmm.
And he later became coach at Yale back in the 30s when they had the great football team, Larry Kelly and Clint Frank. Clint Frank was being the best.
Oh, wait, Greasy was the coach at Yale? I thought he was a coach in West Virginia.
No, well, he might have been before, but he was coach here in the 30s when they had great teams.
I didn't know that.
Ducky Paul was the head coach. But in those days, they had a rule that the football coach had to be a Yale graduate.
Come on.
Oh, yeah. And that was broken a few years after that. And that's Greasy.
What? Really?
Yeah. And you can check this out.
Yeah.
And Greasy really was a brilliant football man. That, yeah.
Well, Carm Cozes told us the other day about meeting Greasy when Carm was the coach, and Greasy telling him how to defense the single wing.
Yeah.
Said the way you defense the single wing is you have 12 men on the field.
But anyway,
sounds like
Greasy went on, left Yale, and became coach of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Right.
And they won the championship 48-49. Mm-hmm. They were the champion.
Mm-hmm.
But there's really a foursome.
All right.
And the reason I know about the foursome, I had the pleasure every now and then when somebody was you substitute, I substituted. And I tell you, when you played with Murray and Rolfe, they were both left-handed. They were both so damn slow. they didn't even think of us, but they were, Red Rolfe was so...
So you got the two Neal boys and Red Rolfe and
Murray Murdoch. As I say, there's a great, great athletic closer.
Yeah. Yeah.
With last athletic history. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. You can get a photo of that.
Yeah, you got any pictures of those guys?
I think so.
You look at home and see if you got any old pictures and stuff.
Yeah. Picture, not Murdoch did, but that's all gone, I'm afraid.
Well, in the hockey book, or the Yale hockey book, I don't. There's nothing on the golfing part of it. It's just the history of the hockey.
What'd you do to yourself?
Oh, I kind of cut the tendon.
It's gone.
When did you do that?
Well, I don't know. I think early May. And it's usually traumatic, usually you know it, but then the finger was starting to curl around. I went and checked.
Do you want a good doctor to go to?
I think I'll stay away.
Did you get operated on?
I hope not. Not yet, no.
So they're just splinting it and hoping it'll heal?
Well, they're trying to get it straightened up. It's got to be straightened up before they do an operation.
That thing still running?
Yeah. So we can start
recording everything?
Well, we're doing a trial. I mean, we're not going to take your words and publicize them.
This won't be on the internet.
That's
you, your voice won't be on the internet.
Well, we might charge them $10 per word.
Oh, it's a big help. It really is.
But that was two foursomes. They were great foursomes when you consider
Two
different. Gene and
and Grant arrived.
And one of the rotten guys took him up there. That was Joe DiMaggio. What a personality.
Really?
God, he was awful.
Who's that?
Slack up. Arrogant. And
he played here?
Yeah.
Who'd he play with?
He played with Dick.
Your brother Dick and Joe DiMaggio played here?
We went over to say hello.
They say he...
I
heard he had a bad... Just bad...
I wonder if Ted Wiggins ever played here.
Well, did Dick ever win the state amateur championship?
No. Only guy from here, I think one of his
little... Bill Lee.
Three times.
Yeah. Beat Bill Lee.
In the club championship.
Yeah. I found that for 18 holes. Bill says, I came in to change my socks. They didn't shake them. Nice cubes.
Well, you've been a help, fella.
Yeah, appreciate it. I played him in the club camp, one of the prior matches.